CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, to help me understand a story calling upon Mary's experience in Europe as the senior advisor to the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, traveling our European allies. The story is the Czech Republic, which is a result, these many decades later, of the catastrophes of the 20th century. The empires broken into sovereign states that were then shattered by the aggressor from Berlin and then reconstituted in the Cold War as stooges of the Moscow Soviet Union and then reorganized again once the Soviet Union fell apart. Well, now we're going to the Czech Republic. Headline for the election, Reuters. Czech election. Here's what could happen next. The Czech Republic finds itself after Saturday's election just passed in the unusual position of having a combined opposition majority and a billionaire prime minister who has yet to give up attempts at forming a new cabinet. Further, President Miloš Zeman is in intensive care due to complications caused by an undisclosed chronic illness, unable to oversee talks to form a new government. Mary, a very good evening to you. This begins to sound like elections in America. Nobody knows who's in charge. With someone in hospital, maybe it's convenient, maybe it's a crisis, and no easy path to forming a government. What are the issues here, Mary? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. It's great to be with you. Well, one thing to say about the Czech Republic is that it has an incredibly vibrant democracy. So when you use the word crisis, don't think that the country is about to fall apart because it isn't. They're just in a time of political uncertainty, as in Germany, where these coalitions are trying to get together and figure out who's going to run what. That could take a series of weeks or even months. I think the surprise is that the Prime Minister, Andrej Babiš, who I actually met the last time I was in the Czech Republic with Secretary Pompeo, he was a larger-than-life figure, somebody who made a lot of money in business, who had been around in politics for many years, had served as Prime Minister since December 2017. He didn't lose by a lot, a slim margin, but Eastern and Central Europe are generally trend more conservative than the rest of the continent. And so I think this result was a tiny bit of a surprise.
And because we talk about Europe in general, Eastern Europe, 20 years ago, the easy code was Eastern Europe is concerned about Russia. Western Europe is concerned about prosperity or growth or in some fashion the way forward, the virtuous way forward. Does that still hold, Mary, in general? Eastern Europe and Western Europe do not have the same ambitions?
Well, Eastern and Central Europe worry an awful lot about Russia after Putin's invasion of Ukraine. And so they have that security concern, I think, more acutely than they have in past decades. China is also a big issue in the Czech Republic. You'll recall the mayor of Prague getting into a fight with the Communist Party and having some legislators travel over to Taiwan. And that's largely because, you know, that anti-communist stance is popular in the Czech Republic. People remember the former Soviet Union and the horrors of communism. And we, too, should pay attention to what's going on in Prague, not just because the Czech Republic is so centrally located, but because it is key to this pushback in Central and Eastern Europe against these malign influences. I'd also be remiss if I didn't mention Turkey, which, of course, has a huge presence in the Balkans. So, you know, this is, I think, an election outcome that it just hasn't gotten a lot of press over here in the United States, but it does deserve our attention. And unfortunately, Democratic U.S. administrations have a tendency to ignore this part of Europe. And I think that's a big mistake. You know, former Secretary of State John Kerry went to France 34 times, but he never went to the Czech Republic or Slovakia or Hungary or Romania, whereas the Trump administration spent a lot of time going to that part of the continent. And I think that's a trend that the Biden folks would be well served to follow.
I remember the anecdote from Herbert Hoover's diaries about his travels in Europe in the 1930s. And in an audience with Hermann Göring, who was then the head of the Prussian government, but at the same time, a man we now associate with monstrosities, Hermann Göring went to a map and pointed to what was then Czechoslovakia. And he said to the former president, Mr. Hoover, see, it's like a dagger pointed in the back of Germany. That is the Czech Republic, as you said, it's centrally located for all of the concerns of Eastern and Central Europe. But we now go to a global concern, which is energy. And in these last days, I've reported on the panic buying in London, a city you know very well, Mary, and the concerns for Christmas. Right now, they're expecting a shortage of certain foods available on the hearth home for Christmas. They're talking about meat because there's a shortage of CO2. But they're also talking about heating their homes with natural gas. There's insufficient supply. That puts Vladimir Putin in the middle of this story. The Newsweek headline tells it very carefully. It says Vladimir Putin holds all the cards as U.S. strategy to stop energy crisis is in disarray. What we know so far is that Russia supplies 40% for the EU of its natural gas needs, and also other countries like Finland and the Czech Republic. However, it is Russia that must now fulfill everybody's contracts, and there is pipeline politics, there's Nord Stream 2, there's the Berlin election. It is a tangle. The question, Mary, that we look at very hard is Vladimir Putin now in a position to make quid pro quo demands of Europe, and is Europe disposed to give in to those demands? I'm thinking of the sanctions and of the concerns in Poland and the Baltic states for Russian aggression.
The simple answer is yes. That's why the Trump team made such a stink over Nord Stream 2, because we didn't want to give Vladimir Putin and his cronies political and energy, political leverage, but also, you know, of course, energy leverage over continental Europe. And in the meantime, when you have nations like Germany, you know, saying they're going to ban nuclear energy, and you have the United Kingdom banning fracking, you know, effectively reducing their supply of the vast energy resources that they have, it will, of course, make them more dependent on third-party suppliers. And in Europe, that's Russia. And it was interesting to me this week to see the UK Defense Secretary point out just how perilous this is for Britons. But neither party in Britain, Labour Party nor the Tory Party, has taken that next logical step and said, well, golly, if we don't want to be dependent on someone as capricious and potentially threatening as Putin, well, golly, maybe we need to loosen our own energy supplies. They just don't have that type of political courage. And don't get me wrong, John, I don't want your listeners to get the wrong impression. I'm not necessarily predisposed to any particular source of energy. I don't think one is necessarily better than the other, although some are cleaner than others. What you want is for the market to determine the energy production and to, in that way, encourage stable supplies of energy. And unfortunately, the energy sources that Europe and the UK have chosen are not stable. Wind doesn't work if the wind doesn't blow, and solar doesn't work if the sun doesn't shine. And so I think what you're seeing is an unfortunate confluence of events that is going to put Europe in a very, very bad spot as winter approaches.
Ukraine is the presenting issue unresolved from 2014 or before. Ukraine right now looks to me to be vulnerable to Russian demands. And your measure of Europe, the Europe you travel to often, Mary, and you know very well, is Europe ready to give in on Ukraine in exchange for guarantees of stable energy through the winter?
Well, they already have, and by allowing the Nord Stream 2 pipeline to be completed. And, you know, we're complicit in this too, John, because the Biden administration has, you know, stopped energy production in places like Alaska. They've you know, taken measures to punish, you know, carbon producers, you know, carbon-based energy. And you have John Kerry going around the world saying, you know, don't buy our dirty fuel. So we're reducing our supply, while at the same time Europe is leaning more heavily on Putin, this is not a recipe for a good outcome. It's just simple logic.
We're weeks away from COP26 in Glasgow, Scotland. There is no one formula that works now, but Europe is keen on green. So is Britain. So is Germany. When they resolve that election, they'll probably be more keen on it. Green does not suit with the natural gas shortage. It would appear that these transition decades are going to drag on well into the century, Mary. I'm just guessing at this end. I won't see the other end, so I'm allowed to guess.
No, natural gas was supposed to be our savior. It was the so-called clean energy. So, again, you have to ask, at what price do you want to go green? Do you want to go green to the point where you can't supply electricity to your people? Do you want to go green to the point where really the poorest in our societies are the ones who suffer the most because they're the ones that are, you know, unable to pay gas prices and have to drive long distances to work? And these are very retrograde taxes when you see energy prices spike. And you can't also discount the role of the U.S. Federal Reserve in driving these prices higher. It's not just supply and demand. It's also the fact that you have inflation driven by the Fed. Oil is priced in dollars. So as we create more dollars and we devalue our currency, we're raising the price of energy. And that's why you've seen oil go above $80 a barrel. And it looks to be trending higher.
I wish I could say nuclear energy in French, because that's one of the examples of an answer that hasn't been taken up yet by Germany, by America. However, we're going to turn to energy in the eastern direction, because Vladimir Putin spans a country called the Pivot Nation, or the Heartland, that has business in East Asia as well as Western Europe. Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former Senior Advisor to the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.